Hello, it's Radio Dharma time again, so welcome to the program and thank you for joining us today. Before we get into the discussion, let's take a moment to check our motivation to see if it's the best we can make it. It's worth repeating that the motivation determines whether the action is positive or not, so it's important to always create the best motivation, which is to attain our highest state of development so we can be of the greatest benefit to others who are suffering. Other motivations, like freeing just ourselves from suffering, either for the foreseeable future or for all time, are worthy, but no other can compare to the motivation to free not only ourselves, but as many others as we can from suffering. So if possible, let's try to set that motivation, at least for participating in this Dharma talk. Thank you. Now, I hope those who listened last week weren't too freaked out by the descriptions of the various realms of suffering we can be born into. The purpose certainly wasn't to scare anybody into paralysis, but rather to encourage us to try and create the causes for us never to experience such states again. For we can be sure that we have experienced all the lower realm sufferings many times, even though we don't remember. You might say, well, if no one remembers it, how can we say it really happened? How can we say some megalomaniac hasn't dreamed all those horror stories up just to keep us behaving in a way that they want? Well, I cannot, of course, take you to the hells and show you as one shows sheep farms to tourists, but with a bit of thought we can infer there are such states. First of all, the Buddha talked about the suffering that beings go through as a result of negative actions, and sometimes, he said, it was so severe we wouldn't even want to hear about it. Also, we cannot say something can't be true just because it doesn't appear to us. We can be pretty sure we were born, though not many of us remember the birth process. As we know, if somebody experiences a powerfully painful occurrence, the mind does tend to block it out later as a kind of defense mechanism. Then we can also consider the various states the human mind can get itself into just in this world, and which are quite plain to us. For instance, a psychotic person might experience spiders crawling all over their body. Now, as far as we're concerned, no such spiders exist at all. But to the person who's experiencing them, they are as real as any tunnel web resident we might find in our garden. And just reading the reports on pee addicts, we can see how distorted our minds can become under certain influences. Certainly, the more neurotically we behave, the more we allow our minds to become familiar with quite extraordinary and sometimes very painful states. So it's certainly not beyond the bounds of belief that if we've created strong negative actions during our lives, our minds will have the imprints to experience deeply psychotic states after death, with all the vivid hallucinations and agony that some patients in mental hospitals have traditionally gone through. The most urgent question then becomes, how do I stop this from happening to me? Of course, the time frame from the answer to that question can vary. We could mean, how can I stop it for the foreseeable future? Or how can I stop it for good? Or even, seeing that others are in the same boat as myself, how can I prevent it for good for both myself and others? So how to stop landing up in the lower realms is the next topic in our discussion, and that means taking refuge. Each religion has the same message: if you believe, you will be saved. Most religions, and even Buddhism to a certain extent, say that if you put your faith in a deity of some sort and act according to that deity's instructions, you will land up in a pleasurable state, like paradise, heaven, and so on, after death. All the major religions emphasize that it's very important to develop love and compassion and to be of as much benefit as others as possible. So we can take that common thread as an indication of how we should behave. But then we have to look carefully at what it means to follow a deity or a higher power. We need to ask questions such as, what is the deity? What does it say makes sense? Do its teachings fit in with my experience? Does it ask me to just apply faith, or does it encourage me to investigate before accepting and following it? I know many people follow a religion because it's what their parents, their grandparents, and so on did up to their ancient ancestors. But one of the most fundamental questions we should ask ourselves is whether the faith of our ancestors makes sense to us according to our experience and whether its teachings are worth following. I know His Holiness the Dalai Lama recommends that we stick with our traditional religion, But unless we really question it as objectively as possible, we may end up just following blindly and believe all sorts of things that either make us uncomfortable or don't accord with our experience. We have to make sense of our faith for it to be truly effective, and not just accept with blind devotion. Otherwise, in a crisis, that faith could just let us down, or we could commit actions that lead to very uncomfortable situations. So let's look at the Buddha, his teachings, and his followers to see if we can confidently put our faith in them. The Buddha's main aim in life after he saw the sick man, the old man, the corpse, and the sadhu was to see if there was a way out of all suffering, and if people could follow it. After a long quest, he found a way did exist, and it could be followed to the extinction of all suffering. He said that all beings have the potential to follow the path to the end of all suffering, and then he went on to describe the path and its result. Of course, not all people had the intelligence to understand the subtle teachings on the path, so often the Buddha taught what was best for the people in front of him. That means we sometimes get what appear to be conflicting elements in the teachings. But if you study the whole of the Buddhist canon thoroughly, you can find how all the teachings lead to this state free of suffering. Now, what do we mean by the state free from suffering? This leads to the question, what exactly is the Buddha? What are his qualities? If we're going to put our trust in somebody, we need to know exactly what we're putting our faith in. Well, first of all, the Buddha is completely free from even the slightest suffering. Even though you might cut a Buddha's body with a sword, he would not experience even the slightest suffering. Even if you were the Buddha's most favorite disciple and you forsook him for his enemy, he would not experience it as suffering. The Buddha is also omniscient. That means he knows everything there is to know, even to the minutest movement of the tiniest packet of energy. Therefore, he's also free from fear. Because he knows exactly how things exist, particularly that he has no inherently independently existing self, he has nothing to fear personally. Nobody and nothing can harm him. A Buddha is able to read minds fully and acts completely spontaneously and perfectly without conceptualizing at all, and so he's not at all hesitant to help others. He can never go wrong or give bad advice because he knows everything and is completely compassionate. A Buddha acts out of selflessness because he realizes intimately that no inherent independent self exists anywhere in anything, and because the nature of his mind is pure love and compassion. Without a reference to self, the Buddha is able to act in every situation only for the benefit of others, even for those who see him as their enemy. The Buddha himself has no enemies and acts with the same overwhelming love and compassion to all beings. All the mental defilements like anger, jealousy, doubt, pride, and so on are totally extinguished in his mind, never to return. So a Buddha will never act according to those self-serving emotions. The Buddha also has no illusion-like concepts like we have in relation to reality. He is, in fact, the perfectly evolved being. So if you can imagine what it must be like to reach the end of your evolution to become a perfect being, you will be looking at a Buddha. The Buddha is not omnipotent. He's not like a creator god. In fact, the Buddha maintained there is no such thing, unless you want to call karma god, because our lives are created and conditioned by our karma. But karma is not a conscious being apart from oneself. So the Buddha cannot save us or lift us up to heaven or anything like that. He said we have the capacity to save ourselves, are in fact the only ones able to do it. The Buddha helps us by teaching the way to go, not by any miraculous action of his own. But we must put in the work, do the hard yards, as the Aussies say, if we want to become like the Buddhas, and it's all up to us. So that briefly is what the Buddha is. We have to ask ourselves, if this kind of being is feasible to us, does it make sense to our experience? If we were fully evolved, would we be this kind of being? If so, then we can put our trust in the Buddha. But first we must look at his teachings to see if they will accomplish what he says they will. Obviously, even if we develop some faith in what the Buddha is, but his teachings are not convincing to us, we won't really be able to follow them. So what does he say about suffering and how to get out of it? Basically, he said we are the authors of our own misery. We don't suffer because the world or the creatures in it are cruel. We suffer because we don't approach our experiences sanely. We don't see reality as it is, but construct a dreamlike reality for ourselves and then try to live through that. In this dreamlike reality, we develop great attachment to some things, aversion to others, and a neutral attitude to the rest. When we act on attachment, aversion, and ignorance, we put tendencies on our mind that strengthen them, and those tendencies also condition our experiences in the future. In fact, those tendencies are the seeds for more dreamlike existences because we construct lives according to our previous conditioning. Suffering comes about because the dreamlike existences do not accord with reality and because we try so hard to make things go the way of our hallucination, although their very nature is to be opposite to how we perceive them. For instance, take one of your friends. When you look at this person, you see him or her as an independent and inherently existing person, as a real person existing completely from their own side, don't you? And don't you see yourself in the same way? And why do you regard this person as your friend? Because they were nice to you. Perhaps they did something that helped you, or they were friendly towards you. So, on the basis of this independent person being perceived as good to you, you develop an attitude of liking, and you want to own them as your friend. So that is how we develop the dreamlike existence. When we see something existing inherently and independently, we develop an attitude towards it, driven usually by attachment, aversion, or neutrality. You either like a person and grasp at them as your friend, see them as an enemy of sorts and want to harm them, or label them stranger and dismiss them as if they had no importance to your life anyway. The Buddha said the way things exist is not as independent, inherently existing entities at all. Each entity is only made up of causes, conditions, and parts, and the mind that conceptualizes or labels it. Your friend is a combination of all the causes and conditions that made it a person, the father and mother's substances, the air your friend breathes, the food they eat, the conditions of temperature needed for life, all the mental conditionings and so on, as well as the parts that make them up, the head, the torso, arms and legs, the inner organs, and so on. And then more subtly, the cells of their body, and even more subtly, the atomic and subatomic particles, etc., and eventually just the energy and space making them up. And then your mind comes along and labels that collection friend. And that is how the friend exists, not as how we actually see him or her. If we could see all the causes and conditions, the cells, the atomic and subatomic particles, all the causes for what goes on in the interior world, would we react to them as we do now? I don't think so. Because the false, dreamlike existence and its causes are also the causes of our suffering, the Buddha encouraged us to forsake such existences and their causes and learn how to look at reality as it is. He pointed out that with effort and determination and a lot of meditation, we could change our minds, purify them of all the incorrect conditionings and wrong ways of looking at things, and stop creating the causes of suffering. He said that if we go with the flow of reality and stop trying to swim upstream from it, as it were, our miseries down to the smallest twinge would automatically stop. And this wasn't just a theory, but the Buddha said that that was how he practiced, and it was how he reached a state of no more suffering. He pointed out that he was an ordinary person, just like ourselves, with nothing special about him, but over a long period of time, and with the right application and effort, was able to achieve the state of enlightenment. So we have the potential to do so as well. And here we have a very basic and rough explanation of the path the Buddha taught, but it is enough for us to check out if he was telling the truth or not. As we investigate, we will necessarily go deeper and deeper into the teachings, and if we are serious, we will develop a meditation practice to see if the teachings lead us closer to long-term happiness or not. The benefits of meditation are well known, so we are certainly not going to lose anything by starting to meditate, so long as we do it carefully and don't try to go overboard. That, like every other overindulgence, could well lead to problems. So now, do you think, according to your own experience, that outline of the Buddha's path speaks the truth or not? Do you look at things in a certain way and then develop emotionally driven attitudes to them? Does that way of behaving bring you ongoing long-term happiness or not? Do you think if you change your mind and your attitude towards life, it will become more joyful, more peaceful, and easier to handle? Now, if you answered yes to all those questions, except the one asking if you have found long-term ongoing happiness, then you'll want to find out more about the Buddha's teachings and see if you can put your trust in them. Otherwise, no matter. Now, we may have developed faith in the Buddha and his teachings, but unfortunately the Buddha passed on over 2,500 years ago, so we no longer have him to tell us how to practice. How can we really get to know the teachings? Well, many people have learnt and practiced in a long lineage down from the Buddha's time. So if we can find people in our time who have gained a lot of knowledge and realizations from the teachings and their practice, they would at least be able to help us start on the path. In fact, the best people to help us would be those who have reached the state of no more suffering themselves. Not only will they be able to show us the path, but we can derive inspiration for our practices by seeing how well accomplished they are. Like a student at school can be inspired by a teacher who not only fully knows his subject, but also how to teach it, we can be taken along the path by excellent teachers who have had well-founded experiences following the Buddha's teachings, and we'll be able to put our trust in them. There, then, are the three things that are offering themselves as our refuge from suffering. First of all, the Buddha as the originator of the teachings, then the teachings themselves, and finally, the community of Buddha's followers, especially those who have gained a firm experiential realization of the Buddha's path. And if we accept them as our refuge, it's a sign that we've become Buddhists. Buddhists often recite the verse, "I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha." And it means that we've considered what the Buddha is, what he has taught, and how the spiritual community can help us, and through that consideration, decided that we've found a way to free ourselves of suffering. Of course, it's good to recite the refuge prayer as many times as possible, but we must also try to be aware of what it means when we recite it. If we don't know what it really means, then we may as well be reciting "Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall, Humpty Dumpty had a great fall, Amen." It will have more or less the same effect on our minds. Now let's do a little meditation on the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, the spiritual community of realized beings. First, sit comfortably with a straight back. Give yourself a smile and focus on your breath for a moment, letting all your thoughts pass on by like leaves in the stream. Now bring to mind an image of the Buddha made of shining light and in the form of teaching. He knows absolutely everything and generates the greatest loving kindness and compassion to all without exception. He's also completely selfless, so utterly free from fear, and is perfectly able to lead all beings to enlightenment. Then think of the Dharma, the Buddha's teachings, how it shows us that our problems lie within and how it's the perfect way to transform the mind, seeing reality as it actually is. Remember how it will free us from all our sufferings and lead us to perfect, unending happiness. Remember how, through the Dharma, we can become perfectly compassionate and loving beings, able and willing to help everyone without bias, even our worst enemies. The Dharma gives us the greatest power possible to help ourselves and all others. Now remember the spiritual community, those who have practiced the Dharma and who have gained great realizations. They really know what the Buddha was talking about and how to put it into practice. They also know how to show us the path and help us when we get stuck or have problems. Now considering those three, Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, did you get some idea of their value to you and how they can help free you from all suffering? Do you think you could put your reliance on them and practice the Dharma until you become enlightened? Please dedicate any positive energy we've developed today to help yourself and all others gain enlightenment and come out of meditation. Perhaps in the coming week, you can think more about what it means to take refuge in Buddha, Dharma and Sangha and also read up about refuge. That will firm up your investigation of whether you can really put your trust in the three jewels. Now time is up and we must go. I hope you'll be with us again next week. Until then, thanks for joining us and goodbye.